This is West Virginia Morning. I'm Teresa Wills. Cases of seniors being scammed by strangers or even victimized by loved ones and caregivers are common in West Virginia and the country at large.
Last year in the United States, those and older lost $3 billion to scammers.
That story and more coming up this West Virginia Morning. Support for West Virginia Morning is proudly provided by Luke Frazier. The Hope Scholarship will be expanded to allow all West Virginia students to apply. Chris Schultz has the story.
State Treasurer Riley Moore announced Tuesday that the HOPE Scholarship will be available to all school-aged children residing in West Virginia beginning with the 2026-2027 school year. The scholarship allows K-12 students to receive state funds that can be used for tuition at private schools, homeschooling curriculum, and other qualifying expenses. The 2021 law that established the HOPE Scholarship Program requires the program to be expanded if the total number of HOPE Scholarship students and applicants was less than 5% of total public school enrollment by July 1, 2024. Previously, only children entering kindergarten or enrolled in public school for a qualifying period of time qualified for the HOPE Scholarship. Payments in recent years have averaged more than $4,400 per child. For West Virginia Public Broadcasting, I'm Chris Schultz in Morgantown.
A federal judge sided with West Virginia's attorney general on approvals for new liquefied natural gas export terminals. Curtis Tate reports.
In an ongoing policy debate between environmentalists and those who support fossil fuel production, the U.S. District Court in Western Louisiana lifted the Biden administration's pause on new LNG export approvals Monday. The policy, halting permits for new export terminals, was announced in January. Soon after, Attorney General Patrick Morrisey joined 15 other states in seeking to lift the ban by claiming the White House doesn't have the authority to enforce it. West Virginia is a top producer of natural gas. Last year, the United States was the top exporter of LNG, most of it headed for Europe and Asia. Energy analysts say additional U.S. export terminals aren't needed to supply those regions. Five terminals are under construction and would double the nation's current LNG export capacity, 12 billion cubic feet a day, by the end of the decade. For West Virginia Public Broadcasting, I'm Curtis Tate in Charleston.
A new set of proposed rules for the maintenance of fire hydrants in the state has been published for review. Chris Schultz has more.
The Public Service Commission's Fire Hydrant Maintenance and Testing Task Force filed the final version of its proposed rules Monday. The state's first rules for overseeing the integrity of fire hydrants include requiring that all fire hydrants be inspected annually and that they be tested for an adequate flow of water at least every 5 years. The commission launched an investigation into the state's hydrant infrastructure a year ago after firefighters responding to a fire in Charleston were unable to find a functioning hydrant. The task force was created after Governor Jim Justice signed House Bill 5617 in March and was tasked with adopting national standards for fire hydrants in the state. The rules must be finalized before taking effect, and any member of the task force may file comments in the next 30 days. For West Virginia Public Broadcasting, I'm Chris Schultz in Morgantown.
West Virginia coal production was down 10% in the first 3 months of the year. The state produced about 2 million fewer tons of coal in the first quarter this year than it did in the first quarter last year, according to the U.S. Energy Information Administration's quarterly coal report. Production declined more sharply, 16% in northern West Virginia than it did in southern West Virginia at 3%. Appalachia-wide production declined 7.5%, while the nationwide production declined 13%. Of coal-producing states, Wyoming posted the biggest drop at 20%, but Wyoming remains the nation's leading coal producer by far, followed by West Virginia. According to the Bureau of Labor Statistics, coal employment was unchanged. As the number of COVID-19 cases across the country soars, West Virginians have access to a new tool to check their vaccination status. Emily Rice has more.
The Department of Health's Bureau for Public Health is offering a new portal tool to help West Virginians access their vaccination records. Data is sourced from the statewide immunization information system and can be accessed from any computer or smart device after completing a short registration process. Secretary of the Department of Health, Dr. Sherry Young, said the information portal will help people stay on top of their vaccination status.
This is a tool that you can use for your own education as an adult, but you can also use for your children and to keep your family safe.
Nationally, the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention, or CDC, is reporting an increase of 1.4% in positive COVID-19 cases in recent weeks. The CDC currently classifies West Virginia as likely growing in epidemic status. Dr. Young recommended planning ahead and using available data to protect yourself and your family.
The best thing to do is to be well-informed for the places that you're going, know what those rates are, help get the prevention that you need. So take this tool, see if you are due for a COVID shot before you go traveling, especially into an area where you're seeing an uptick. And that's a great way to protect yourself.
For Appalachia Health News, I'm Emily Rice in Charleston.
Appalachia Health News is a project of West Virginia Public Broadcasting with support from Marshall Health. This is West Virginia Morning. I'm Teresa Wills. It's 7:50. Becoming mostly sunny and hot, high temperatures in the 80s and 90s. Tonight, a chance of rain and thunderstorms with lows in the 60s and 70s. Tomorrow, variable cloudiness with a chance of rain and thunderstorms, highs in the 80s and 90s. Support for WVPB is provided by Solar Holler, building on West Virginia's history of powering the nation by bringing solar power to the coal fields. More at solarholler.com. Cases of seniors being scammed by strangers or even victimized by loved ones and caretakers are common in West Virginia and the country at large. William Ehlenfeld is the U.S. Attorney for the Northern District of West Virginia and prosecutes these crimes far too often. He spoke with reporter Chris Schultz to raise awareness of these crimes and how to avoid them. Their phone connection caused some technical problems, but we felt the topic was important enough. We wanted to bring you this discussion.
Can you tell me a little bit about the state of fraud in West Virginia? What is the magnitude of this issue that we're facing?
Elder financial exploitation is trending upward in West Virginia and throughout the country. Last year in the United States, those being older lost $3 billion to scammers. So it is a significant issue. The targets of this type of fraud are vulnerable for a variety of reasons. The criminals have identified a really good target for them. It's a tremendous challenge for us, and it's important that we talk about it so that we can try to protect people from becoming victims.
What are some things that folks themselves and also relatives and community members need to be looking out for?
So I just want people to be aware that if either they themselves or a family member or a friend has sent money and they quickly realize that they shouldn't have sent that money, if they contact the U.S. Attorney's Office, we might be able to reverse or freeze the money. So my guidance to people, one, resist the pressure to act quickly. Criminals are always using the sense of urgency as to their advantage. We see this over and over where the criminals are saying that they need the money right now. They need it by the end of the day. Call a friend or a loved one that you trust. and ask them what they think. So my second tip would be never to click on a link that is sent to you via text message or via email that you aren't expecting to receive. Another important thing for people to keep in mind is to be careful with a power of attorney. A power of attorney is an important document that allows you to have someone else take care of your business affairs and your medical affairs if you're no longer able to do so. However, we've seen many cases where a power of attorney has been abused by the person who's been provided with that authority. Another way to go about it is to give someone a limited power of attorney. The last thing I would say is with regard to in-home care. Sadly, after adult children, the second most common category of perpetrators of adult theft are in-home care providers. And so my advice there is if you do have someone coming in to take care of a loved one, to make sure that you secure all the valuables and that there's no access to information or documents that might allow someone to steal from the person they're supposed to be caring for.
You know, in this increasingly digital age, has your office had to deal with more of these touch points for fraud, your Google searches or your ads on websites, things of that nature?
One of the things that gives us great concern is with regard to mimicking someone's voice. And we've got the common scheme of a family member in need, and they think that grandchild's in trouble and that they need to send that grandchild money right away. With advances in AI, it's going to be a lot easier to trick someone into believing that it is actually a loved one on the other end of the call. Same thing with government impersonation, which is a very common scheme, but it sounds very believable over the phone. All of those things are going to make it harder for victims to detect that it's a fraud and make it more likely that those schemes are going to succeed going forward.
So while I have you here, something that I'm curious about is, you know, what are the penalties for these transgressions? Are they always federal level because of wire fraud and things of that nature? So what are people facing when they commit these crimes?
Many of these cases, there's concurrent jurisdiction in that they can be prosecuted in either state or federal court. The penalty is going to be driven by the amount of the fraud that's been committed. Your criminal history also plays a role in what penalty you receive, and that will weigh into the judge's decision as far as how much the penalty should be. But something like that in state court could be a 1 to 10 year range that could be imposed if somebody is misusing someone's credit card. So shorter answer to your question would be the charges could be filed in either state or federal court, and the sentences are going to be driven by the criminal history of the perpetrator and the amount of the fraud that's committed.
Is there anything else that I haven't given you the opportunity to discuss or anything that you'd like to highlight at this point?
It really hadn't hit me until I've been reading a lot on this issue in addition to working on it on a daily basis. And it's when someone is a victim of something like this, they've been tricked. It's embarrassing. And it can also be traumatic depending upon the person who does the victimizing. You know, if it's a romance scam, for example, we don't always want to talk about that. We don't always want to go in and file a police report because of the embarrassment that we feel. We strongly encourage people to come forward. There's not going to be any judgment. We see it happen on a regular basis. It's very easy to get tricked because the perpetrators are more and more sophisticated than ever before. We'll do everything we can to hold the perpetrator accountable and to recover the money that's been stolen.
That was U.S. Attorney William Ehlenfeld speaking with Chris Schultz about elder fraud. You can read a longer version of this interview on our website at wvpublic.org. West Virginia Morning is a production of West Virginia Public Broadcasting, which is solely responsible for its content. You can keep up with the latest West Virginia news throughout the day on our website, wvpublic.org. Support for our news bureaus comes from Shepherd University. West Virginia Morning is produced with help from Bill Lynch, Brianna Heaney, Chris Schultz, Curtis Tate, Emily Rice, Eric Douglas, Jack Walker, Liz McCormick, and Maria Young. Eric Douglas produced today's show. I'm your host, Teresa Wills. This is West Virginia Morning.